Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one very tasty treat? I know that you are. And I know that you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and I am once again beside myself with joy because this is probably, I don't want to hurt the other guests' feeling, but this is probably my favorite segment, Culinary CPR with the incredible, with the inimitable Chef Luca Paris. He's all over Food Network where he crushed a competition on Guy's Grocery Games. He's a chef. He owns Luca's Mediterranean Cafe up in Keene, New Hampshire. He runs the market at Luca's. They've won, you know, Excellence in Dining, Best Catering in New Hampshire, and the list goes on and on and on. He was Restaurateur of the Year up there in New Hampshire. Without further ado, I am tipping my hat to you, sir. Welcome once again, and thank you for these incredible recipes. You just make me hungry, you know, reading the text.
What is up, big guy? It's good to talk to you, and getting excited for a wonderful year and a lot of fun stuff going on. And we're going to be talking some good food today. I'm pretty excited about the show today.
Okay, so tell us what you got on the plate, if you will.
So there are a few parts of an animal that just get me super excited. You know, I love all proteins. I love all food. I mean, I like all these different parts, but there are a few that get me as excited as my favorite meat of all time, which we won't be talking about today, but I need to put it out there, is the chicken thigh, which is my ultimate everyday, any way. I think I could do a cookbook of just 5,000 chicken thigh recipes and never get tired of it. But right after that, and one of my favorite things to do is braised meats. And for me, one of my favorite things is a pork shank. And for people who haven't had pork shank before, you need to, after you listen to the show, you need to go out and get yourself a Dutch oven, which is a nice heavy pot that you cook on the stove, or you could braise it in the oven as well. And you will make one of the most succulent, delightful, exciting dishes you've ever made, fall off the bone, tender, juicy. Pork shank is the way to go. It's you know, you could buy a lamb shank, a pork shank, you could do a veal shank, you could
ossobuco.
Do any type of ossobuco, but for me, it's something about a pork shank that will, once you have it, you want to go back to it again and again and again. And this is actually the dish we're talking about today is actually a dish that's on my restaurant menu for our fall and our winter menus. And it's apple cider braised pork shank. And when you're thinking about apples, you know, northeastern part of the United States where you have apple cider and you have maple syrup and you have all these things from the fall and early spring, they come into play. Now, we're not going to use any maple syrup in here, but there's no saying you can't, because all our recipes are ideas and concepts for you to work off of, not specifically you have to follow them directly. But this is going to be your inspiration to make one of the most amazing braised pork shank dishes you've ever had, and I cannot wait for people to have this.
And I love, you know, we talk about, and you and I often talk about, you know, the rhythms, the seasonality, and actually how, you know, important that is, you know, for us in terms of the foods and developing, you know, a healthy, functioning gut microbiome. And there's just something about these braised dishes for me that, like you said, it just screams fall and winter. It's so hearty. It's so satisfying. And, you know, for folks that don't know, you know, braising is generally where we're taking, you know, something like a protein, sear it off, and then you're going to, you know, cook it, you know, about 3/4 of the way submerged, you know, in a liquid, in a braising liquid. Mm-hmm. And it just allows all those things that if you just try to cook it up, the collagens and the other components that are in these tough cuts of meat, it allows just, you know, be melt into the broth. And like you said, it just falls off the bone. It's just so good.
Right, and I think that's the big key here you're getting to. For people who haven't had pork shank or any of the tougher / more inexpensive cuts of meat, how do you make them good? Braising is the way to go, because like you said, you're breaking down the fatty collagens and this tissue that holds all this meat together, which normally if you just pan-seared it or tried to quick cook it, you're going to be chewing like bubble gum for hours on a piece of meat and fat. What you're allowing the heat to do and the long cooking process to do is start breaking all that down. And we both know, and this is why we We don't say don't eat fat. You just, if you eat the right fat, you're going to be happy. We both know that fat equals tons of flavor, not just flavor, tons of flavor. So you really don't have to do too much. It brings so much to the party that it just explodes with flavor. And as long as you cook it correctly, if you've undercooked your pork shank, you will know. You will never be able to chew through it. If you've cooked it correctly, it falls off the bone, the leg bone, and it just melts in your mouth when you put it in there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then all those flavors. And the great thing about braising, like when you do a roast and you take all the drippings, you're not only taking a roast and taking all the drippings, you're creating a sauce at the same time that you just have to reduce a little bit or thicken a little bit or just pour over the meat again. And it's one-stop shopping at this point. You sear, you get your sauce working at the same time. When you're done, you've created this amazing dish that you would spend $20, $30, $35 in a restaurant for.
Yeah, and this is essentially, you know, one pot cooking that's kind of all the rage, the slow cooking. And
right.
Two, you know, key things that I want to emphasize, you know, on this is, you know, the cooking these types of meats. People have all heard of the Okinawan, you know, diet and how healthy the folks are in Okinawan. And I think you and I have talked about this maybe before, but just to revisit it, you know, this is a group. It's an island off of Japan and is one of the not only longest lived, but most healthful populations on Earth. They also eat more pork than anyone else in Japan. But two critical differences from the way a lot of people here in the U.S. consume pork. One is that it's essentially a heritage breed. It's a smaller hog. It once they use it up on the island, they are not importing, you know, big commercial hogs and eating slabs of bacon. The other is that they use literally, you know, they use everything but the oink. And I think in some cases, right, they actually may use the oink. And what they found when looking at the health components, that it was critical that folks, you know, used and served dishes like what we're going to talk about today, where you're breaking down the collagens and all these other types of foods to eat in terms of their nutrients and whatnot, as opposed to, you know, simply putting on another slice of bacon, which the pork belly is delicious. You're not going to hear any complaints from me about that.
Right.
But the fact that you're eating dishes like this variety, you know, I see folks selling bone broth, you know, and charging.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of money for bone broths, and, you know, and I've seen, you know, physicians now more like quacks out there because they don't know what they're talking about. But they're selling, you know, all the health benefits of bone broth, of which there are a lot, but they're trying to sell you these books. You know, you don't need to make something special, folks. All you need to do is braise this dish and you're getting bone broth.
There is in a small town, the small mountain town in Italy, called Colle San Lorenzo. This is where my father grew up. We would go back summers and spend summers over there. And a lot about what you're saying happens there also. Now, you got to remember, back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and especially in these poor small towns, if you had a pig, you had one pig. There was no going to the butcher and buying your different cuts of meat. You had one pig. And this pig you treated really well, and it grew up with your family until it was time for that pig to now treat you well, and you didn't waste anything. All the fat was utilized. All the bones were utilized. Things were made to make sausage, to prosciutto, to dried meats, to cured meats, to you name it, including braising meats and what have you, and your own, all these other things. And that's the way we used to live. You didn't waste anything. We have this wonderful, and in some ways it is wonderful, that we could do whatever we want, buy whatever cuts we want, get whatever we need. But when you have the opportunity to utilize these cuts, and when you start learning how to work cuts that are, in essence, inexpensive, can be brought further, you're going to find depth of flavor that you've never had before. Take
Absolutely.
A pork tenderloin and a pork shank, eat them side by side. I will pick the pork shank every single day of the week. A beef tenderloin, versus braised beef. Give me the braised beef. Give me a really good bolognese. There's so much more flavor out of this, and this is the stuff people are saying, oh, we don't want this. I love this kind of idea. So, and you're realizing that that's not a bad way to eat. It's actually great for you. It's wonderful, and it's the best comfort food you could think of in the winter and in the colder months. And that's like you said, and coming right back to what you said when we first started, was that is where we come back to, this is what our body needs now. We need comfortable foods. Yep. We need good flavors. We need hearty. We need to feel totally satisfied. And it's not only for our body and our systems, it's also in our heads that it works. I wouldn't have a braised shank meat over a ton of polenta maybe in the middle of summer because it might make me feel heavy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not a bad thing, but I still probably wouldn't do it because it doesn't equate to what I like to eat in the summer. But it works now, or it works when the weather's cold. So it's amazing if we start letting our bodies dictate what we're going to have. You'll be amazed how many of us revert back to, okay, this is what I want now. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, you hit all the points, and I wanted to get onto you sharing some tips from the recipe and some secrets. But when you get the newsletter in your mailbox, you'll get the recipe. So head on over to Chef Dr. Mike and make sure you're subscribed to the newsletter. I'm going to suggest one change on the recipe. Can I do that?
Sure. I got my pen out. Let's go.
Okay. So I would use an avocado oil instead of canola oil. And the reason,
all right.
And I know people talk about the canola oil and health benefits of that, but what most folks don't realize when you're buying that canola oil, I guess you could even use a little olive oil if you wanted, either or. But the reason I don't use the canola oil is that like 99.9% of it is GMO variant. So it is harvested after, being exposed to a ton of Roundup or glyphosate. So that is good because people, I say, oh, you're a cardiologist. You must love canola oil and you use it all the time because it's so heart healthy. And it's like, no, I actually avoid canola oil, not because I have a problem with canola oil, but I do have a problem with the way that it's grown. And most folks are unaware, there's so much talk about, oh, GMO corn and this and that. That folks are unaware that the big ones that are farmed GMO, soy, corn, and canola oil. So that's my two cents. That's my contribution.
And I love it. I have now been, it's now been deleted, and until I get to my some avocado oil, we'll be using olive oil in that mix.
Olive oil would be great too.
Out. Yeah, but I will do move over to avocado. And I know we have limited time, but does, and I don't know how much it would affect the flavor. What's your take on coconut oils? Do you like those too?
I do. Yeah, that's another great one. And I get a lot that's sort of the more raw coconut oil. And sometimes you can get a little bit of that coconut flavor. It's not as flavor sort of neutral. But it's got a great smoke point. And like if I've done some stuff, like some curries, and it adds this like really cool kind of coconut undertone to it. And I've done some shrimp with the coconut oil. So yeah, you're spot on. That'd be a great one.
Those coconut oils seem to go a long way too. So you want me to give out that recipe?
Yeah. Let's divvy it up, man. Cause you got me so hungry.
it's a really easy one. The big key is it's about six servings, six pork leg shanks. They're about a pound each. Do not be afraid of the pound size. You can split them off the bone. There is about a 2 to 4 ounce bone in there, so it depends on what size it is. So you're already cutting down from there, and then they shrink a little bit because some of that fat does break down and come off. So it's still a great size. If you start with a pound raw pork shank, you're going to come down to a perfect portion size. Might be a little bit heavy for some people that like to eat lighter, but this is the time of the year. If we're going to eat, this is the time we're going to do it. So, and you can pick those up at any reputable store. If you could do it locally, the local farms love to sell pork shanks because people stay away from getting them all the time, and I bet you could get a good deal on some of those. Salt and pepper to taste, of course. Half pound of smoked slab bacon. These are these big, thick pieces of bacon that you cut off into big chunks. If you can't get smoked slab bacon, look for the thickest cut bacon. Really, you're just adding some smokiness to the braising, and that's all it really does. You're going to have an onion, bay leaves, thyme sprigs, garlic cloves, about 3 cups, maybe even more, depending on how much liquid this we're creating, of apple cider, 3 cups of chicken broth, a carrot and celery. That's your mirepoix, the onions, carrot, celery.
Yep.
I write ribs, using the celery ribs, nice pieces in the middle, in the description. But I personally like to use every part of the celery. So those leaves add a nice little kind of little bitteriness to it. that kind of blend well. As long as you don't overdo your celery, it'll bring some flavor. So in a deep casserole, you heat the oil until just to get shimmering. So when you add your pork shanks with the salt and pepper, that you'll get a sear. You want to get a sear on the outside of this. So over medium-high heat, you're going to brown them all over. It takes about 10 minutes. And then you're going to remove them from the pot. You add that slab bacon to the pot because now you have the fond, you have all this foundation, all these pieces of that pork goodness in that oil. You're going to add the slab bacon. You're going to sear that till it's golden brown. Then you're going to add the cinnamon stick, onion, bay leaves, thyme, garlic, about one at a time. Just give each time, let that start cooking, add the next thing. Let that start cooking, add the next thing. I never put in garlic first because I want the temperature to break down just a little bit so I'm not burning the garlic and I don't have this bitter garlic flavor.
Yeah, because it gets real bitter if it burns.
Right. Exactly.
A lot of folks. Oh, the other thing, too, with garlic, when you got those garlic cloves, if you're like me and you have like tons of garlic around all the time, you know, sometimes I'm getting to the end and I'm using it up and you see, you know, it's actually starting to sprout a little bit.
Right.
You could still use that clove of garlic, but go ahead and pull out that little green sort of stem thing, which is a stem coming out, because that's really, really bitter, too.
Exactly.
But if you take that out, you can definitely use the rest of it. And don't forget to smash it.
And you want to smash it a little bit. It brings out a lot of flavor, nuttiness for that, too. So at this point, we've gotten all those ingredients in. We add the apple cider and the chicken broth and bring to a gentle boil. Then we return the shanks back into the casserole. Tuck the meat into the liquid so that's mostly submerged. Doesn't all have to be. This is where you put in the vegetables. Now, there's two ways to go about it with the vegetables. After you do the slab bacon, you could actually add your vegetables before you put the shanks back in and roast those a little bit if you want, or you want to start them raw. There are so many variations on this that one guy will tell you it's right. One chef will tell you do it this way. I'm saying whatever you like. Sometimes I sear them beforehand. Sometimes I forget and I put them in after. You still get an amazing product. Then you cover the shanks of vegetable with the lid. Simmer for 2 hours with the lid on or until the meat is tender. Now, I can't tell you how long it's going to take on this medium high heat. I think it's going to take 2 to 3 hours. It's a really good breakdown time for when your pork shanks get tender. Going in, that little fork test, if you go in and it separates from the bone nice and easy, and you can see that kind of tenderness to it, your fork will go right through. It's perfect. Now, I will tell you that you can never overcook a braised pork shank too far. So if you've cooked it too much, what you're going to find is a piece of meat that just really falls apart. It's almost shreds, and it doesn't, plate presentation's not perfect, but it'll still be delicious and still have a lot of flavor. But you do want to get into between that sweet spot of not tough, but not fall apart mush. And there's this tender spot where it's still a whole piece of meat. It has some chew factor to it. It's all part of that whole experience when you're eating. And it really makes it delicious. So then you've gotten it to that point. You uncover the casserole, remove the shanks, and then you want to simmer the liquid until it's reduced to about 2 cups of sauce. There's going to be all your ingredients are still in there. What's going to happen is there'll be the fat from the pork that's in there as well, so you know that's going to add to it. Then you strain the sauce, discard the cinnamon, the bay leaves, the thyme, all that stuff. And then that sauce is going to have a certain amount of fat. I like doing pork shanks the day before. Now, by doing that, my shanks are cooked, they're sitting and resting, and then my sauce gets to cool the night of, creates a little fat cap. I take the fat off, and I've reduced this beautiful sauce with it. If I want to thicken it, I want to add a little cream, I want to do whatever, I have this smoky bacon apple cider sauce that's out of control. I then, the next day, warm the sauce up, put the shanks in there, let them sit in there till they warm up, and then you serve them with root vegetables, or you serve them over mashed potatoes, or you serve them by themselves, you have a delicious dish with so much flavor. I think it's a home run, and it's perfect for this time of the year.
It is, and that is just a great, you know, tip that you gave, because that really is, because if you don't get that fat off one way or the other, you know, it can get a little greasy tasting,
yes,
I think. And,
exactly.
And that's just a brilliant move. And you know, you can cook, you can serve some, you know, that night. And if you're cooking extra, like you said, this is a great thing, you know, to do, you know, on a Sunday, and you have a wonderful meal on a Tuesday when you're coming home and you're busy and you've worked all day and it's cold outside, but you didn't have like, you know, 4 hours to let this stuff cook. So that's a great tip. Something else that I do when I do a dish like this for folks is I take, you know, like it would be the cinnamon and the herbs, and I just tie them up in a little cheesecloth with a little, you know, butcher twine. And that way, when it comes time to get the stuff out, all you have to do is pull out. Everything's in that cheesecloth. And don't forget to squeeze it, because there's like great juices in there, tons of flavor. You know, just squeeze that on the back of a spoon, and that makes it sort of very easy. And then it makes as you said, the sauce, once you get that fat cap off, then you got a really nice, you know, strained, smooth, silky sauce, and all that collagen that came from the bone and the connective tissue and things like that, that's all dissolved into that sauce. And, you know, that helps thicken it, because folks, what is gelatin essentially, but, you know, the same type of stuff.
Exactly. It's the best stuff in the world, isn't it?
I would say, you know, if you had, you know, culinary currency, I mean, this stuff is like culinary gold, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you could
create stocks and stocks that you keep around that are thick and rich. I mean, here on a regular basis, we'll do a veal stock. We make a beautiful pork stock out of our pork shanks. You make a great stock, and even our chicken stocks are gelatinous to a point when we cook them down really far that you scoop and serve. You scoop it out, throw it in a pan, and it just adds a ton of flavor. You intensify the flavors that you want without going to get a bouillon cube, which is mostly salt, or any of these bases, again, which are mostly salt. And if they're sodium-free bases, then there's something that's keeping those things from going bad, because that's what your salt is doing, those preservatives, so you don't know what's in there. This way, if you're just cooking down a chicken stock and creating this rich chicken, pork, beef stock, you know what's in there, you've been through the process, and there's this kind of internal excitement because you know you've prepared this dish, and it's just added so much more flavor back into it. So if you could do your own stocks, I really recommend it.
Oh, you know, people often ask, well, you know, what's the difference? You know, I followed the recipe, you know, that Luca gave me when I ate it in a restaurant, and I did everything spot on. But, you know, it just wasn't quite as good as when, you know, Chef Luca makes it. And I think that 99% of the time, that's because they're using, you know, a stock out of a box or a can or a bouillon cube. You know, that's like the restaurant secret is a really, really good stock. And, you know, what you described, the process you described, this is why, you know, you don't have to go out and spend all this money and buy these bone broth books and all this stuff to cook bone broth. If you just made this delicious food, this is a bone broth. I think it's better than a bone broth because it's got, you know, even more added things and these incredible flavors.
I know. You got a little apple cider in there. If you have an apple orchard next to you, get some local apples. Oh my gosh, it's delicious. So and you know, sometimes in the recipe, I'll get an apple cider that's a fresh apple cider, basically unpasteurized or uncooked. So it just comes right out of the press. And you have this beautiful fresh apple.
Oh, wow.
And you're cooking it down. So it works really well. So, or if you want to go in the other direction, you could do a hard apple cider. It kind of gives a little nuance. That kind of cooks off a little bit, and it gets a little more pricey. But
Chef, how about if you use the fresh apple cider, and then you just have a hard apple cider for yourself?
You just drink it.
It never makes it to the pot when it's around me.
and remember, you got about 3 hours of cooking time once you let it go, and you're not... You know, two or three of those apple ciders later, you could be all set, you know?
You could be just as braised as the meat.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know what? Like I said, the people out there, people who've had pork shank right now are listening to the show and going, oh, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I get it. And people who haven't or might have been afraid or think that it's going to be difficult, it's actually in very easy preparation. So it's whether you're using this recipe or you find one online or you find something that you like. What I'd like to give you is the understanding that it's really not as hard as people are going to make you think it is if they tell you this is a tough dish. It's simple. It's fun. It's no different than when people get into doing pot roasts or stews or things like that. It's the same concept, just prettier, and it's a wonderful flavor.
Yeah, and the other thing that you hit on earlier that I think is key is that it's very economical. I mean, you know, we're not buying, you know, a, you know, 21-day aged filet mignon. You know, we're not paying that kind of price. This was, I think, as you pointed out, I mean, this was the common person's food, you know, back in the day. You know, the lords and kings, you know, took the bacon and they left you with a shank. Oh, what am I going to do with that? Well, you know, I can add a little salt and, you know, let it age and I can have a ham, you know, I can braise it and break down all this tough stuff. So, and it's was survival food and it turns out it's delicious. And as you said too, you know, you go to, we both know, you know, haven't done the restaurant thing. A braised is like, you're going to charge $5 more. And that's why we say it instead of saying it's a stew.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's because if it's braised, we could definitely charge more for it on the menu.
I have no problem giving away that secret. You know, if you haven't figured that out all the times people go out to eat, then I can't help you with that. It's our goal is only to make it worth it when you pay that $5 more. That's all.
Well, this recipe is, and you've really given people, like you said, a number of recipes too, because this would be fantastic, you know, with a veal shank for ossobuco,
sure.
You know, lamb shank, and you know, if you can get them, you know, again, it goes all back to sourcing. What's really interesting too is if you were to do this, say, as spring was coming out, you probably have a different flavor profile because the animals are eating different things, you know, versus doing that shank in the fall when, you know, all the plants have changed over. And, you know, if you've got pork or something, they might be eating the mast out of the woods and things like that. So you can actually get a real key to the seasonality. And as you said, you know, this is definitely not something I would make or have in the summer, but, you know, as winter is winding down and spring's coming along and certainly in the fall, man, this is what you need to eat and experience, you know, if you want to get in touch with the seasonality, with the natural rhythms of food. This is brilliant.
Well, one of the things I like, if you want to touch on, you know, like when we talk about lamb shank, you could take the same recipe, substitute lamb shanks, put red wine in place of the apple cider, and you're going to make this wonderful red wine stock reduction off of that. Let that reduce and maybe add in some rosemary instead of thyme. So now you've just brought in three new flavors, changed it totally to this rosemary red wine sauce to go with a braised lamb shank. And just following the same exact recipe we talked about, you've created a whole new dish, and you can't get much better than it. So maybe even instead of onions, bring in leeks. So you're playing spring, early spring thing. So there's a lot of different ways to go about it. So what's fun about all our recipes that we share is that they're interchangeable. It's not the recipe, it's the technique. And no two recipes are alike. Like Jacques Pepin once said, he said, I've created the same recipe again and again and again, but I've never followed the recipe more than the first time that I've actually took that moment in time to write it. It's always changed depending on the ingredients, depending on the time of the year, whether it's humidity or what have you. The recipe is a guideline to what you're going to make in your own light. So every time you make it, it actually could even be better than what I've made. It's going to be your dish, which is really exciting when I see that happen.
You said it wonderfully well, and that's why I tell folks, you know, follow a recipe one time to learn the technique. Once you've got the technique, then be a chef. Don't be a collector of recipes. Chef Luca, you can check all his information and great recipes out on lucaparis.com. And until we meet again, my friends, may the only pain in your life be champagne.